First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's a Wednesday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope everybody's Wednesdays are off to a good start. We're going to get you over the hump on this penultimate Wednesday in the month of March. Gorgeous weather where we are based in Houston. And I hope if you're in a colder climate that you're at least maybe starting to see winter give way to spring. I know in certain parts of the country, we're still a good 5-6 weeks away from that time, as those winters can be pretty long up north. But certainly hope everybody's Wednesdays are off to a good start. John Bellmer, our producer, on the other side of the glass. Again, my name is Greg Frank. We got a couple of guests coming today, as we will be joined in about 25 minutes by Connor Hope, business operations leader for Heat Chick College Basketball and co-host of the Hangout College Basketball podcast. And in the second hour of today's show, Teresa Walker will join, covers Tennessee sports for the AP, as Ja Morant is supposed to return tonight for the Memphis Grizzlies amidst what's been a very messy, bizarre, weird last couple of months for the star in Western Tennessee. So we will get to a little bit of NBA later on in today's show, but let's begin with the World Baseball Classic last night, as the Team Japan wins it 3-2 over the United States in Miami. And Japan claims its third World Baseball Classic title. The United States has won, and the Dominican Republic has won. So certainly some domination from the Japanese in this event, which began in 2006. And I think on a national, global level, last night was the biggest, like the highest of heights that this event has reached in the, you know, near 20 years of its existence. And as I said, 5 World Baseball Classics. I think anytime you have something new, there's always going to be a little bit of, okay, let me see what you're really giving me from a product standpoint, you know. I don't think that when we kind of first had LIV Golf last year, I don't know that there was a massive appetite for it. And it seems like their product has not been good enough to really garner, you know, it feels like now they've kind of hit their ceiling of the people that are interested. That's that. And, you know, I'm not sure how much longer LIV Golf will be around. But the World Baseball Classic seems to have grown in popularity. I think baseball is a very global game. When you look at, obviously, Japan now having won 3 World Baseball Classic championships. Of course, all of the, you know, Central America, South American countries that produce really good baseball players, you know, the interest is spiking in a positive direction there. And I think in the United States, with, I mean, just look at the lineup that the United States churned out the last 10 days. Of course, they won the thing in 2017. So I think this event has grown in popularity. And I think last night was really a great moment for baseball. And what we saw, even though as Americans, I'm sure we're disappointed that Japan came out on top, this is a sport that rightfully so gets crushed for not being able to market properly, not being able to publicize stars, not being able to show the world who its best players are. And I think they got it right for a change. And let's give credit where credit is due. Rob Manfred gets torn to shreds over a lot of things. But he was very quick to let all of us know that this event will be back in 2026. And, you know, when you think about it, again, I know it was a Tuesday night, but maybe it kind of, and I haven't seen what the TV ratings looked like for the event, but maybe it kind of was the perfect storm where you weren't going up against March Madness. That second weekend doesn't begin until tomorrow. We're still in the regular seasons in the NBA and the NHL. Major League Baseball obviously has not started its regular season yet. You say you weren't pausing the MLB regular season to hold this event. And we had a baseball game to watch with, obviously, our country in the event 1 week before the Major League Baseball regular season starts. And even though Japan won, I've kind of developed a little bit of a nuanced view on why I still feel, and Mark DeRosa echoed my sentiment as well kind of last night, in that really it was just a good night and a good 2 weeks for baseball, or 3 weeks, however long the event was. Because we had Shohei Ohtani close the game out, which obviously is not something you see him do for the Angels. Usually he's a starting pitcher. You saw him in the late innings leg out an infield single, showcasing his elite speed. And I just think on his entire talents were on full display these last few weeks, again, on a worldwide stage, which when you're playing for a team that's always stuck in the basement like the Los Angeles Angels are, we don't get that. And they're on the West Coast. Shohei Ohtani finished the World Baseball Classic with a slash line of a .435 batting average, a .606 on base percentage, and a .739 slugging percentage. He had an ERA of 1.96 and 11 strikeouts in 9 2/3 innings pitched. The entire world got to see who is undoubtedly the face of baseball for these last few weeks. And, of course, he's going into a walk year where I believe, much like many, that the Angels will not compete and he'll be traded probably come July. If I were the Angels, I'd probably just trade him now because I mean, we've been down this road before. Every March and April, the Angels try and tell you, it's going to be different. We're going to be in this thing. And it never seems to happen. But you had Shohei Ohtani facing off against Mike Trout. Obviously, they've been Angels teammates for a while. And ultimately, baseball wins there. And as Americans, we think of it as, well, yeah, I looked at it yesterday as from a nationalistic standpoint. How much are we going to care about this versus maybe having success in the World Cup? But this is supposed to be our game, right? They call it America's pastime. And I think if baseball wins, we should still appreciate that as Americans. And I think Mark DeRosa echoed those sentiments. Here's what he said last night.
I mean, if you were going to write a script, I was hoping it was going to go our way with Mikey Popham one against Ohtani. But like I said, I mean, the baseball world, this thing is real. The WBC is real. The whole world got to see Ohtani come in, big spot, battling. It's kind of how it was. Kind of scripted. I just wish it would have went different.
And yeah, of course, we would have loved to have seen the red, white, and blue come out on top last night. But, you know, I don't think any of us are really, let's say, losing sleep over the fact that Japan won last night. And I think on a larger level, you just wanted to have this be a celebratory event for the sport. And hopefully, you know, we'll see what kind of storylines emerge over the next 6 months in Major League Baseball. But let's hope that there's a lot of positive momentum to build off of this. I do think that one thing that I talked about a little bit in show prep with Belmer, our producer, was, well, Would you move the championship rounds around to another country because they have played the knockout stage in ballparks in the United States? And I go back and forth on that because, you know, we're playing in March, so it's been in Florida and California, you know, warm climates. You know, they could have it in Texas, Beller. You know, we could.
I'd love that. That'd be awesome.
Exactly. World Baseball Classic at Minute Maid Park, or I'd go, you know. But you obviously can't play in the northern ballparks in March, at least if you want to showcase your event properly. You're not going to do that. So, but the problem is with putting the event, you know, the championship stages in other ballparks or in other countries, then you start messing with the time and when you're playing the games. And, you know, the United States is the country that you should most want to kind of build yourself up in, because that's where the biggest and best sports leagues in each sport reside. You play baseball, you want to get to Major League Baseball. You play football, you want to play in the NFL, etc. Basketball, you want to come play in the NBA. So I go back and forth on if it would make sense to play in, I don't know, Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic or Japan. You know, these countries that have been good. But regardless of where you're playing, the most important thing was who was playing. And there were a lot of big names that like this thing. You heard Mark DeRosa say that it is here to stay. And the thing is real. So a win for baseball is probably a win for America, even though the United States ended up on the short end of the stick. We'll take a timeout. We'll go back to Rick Pitino's introductory press conference yesterday at Madison Square Garden. The new St. John's coach speaks. That's next.
We're taking you through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try BlueChew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
Well, we will be enjoying the beginning of the second weekend in March Madness starting tomorrow, with regional action being played in the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. And out west, gosh, those games in Vegas are really good, with Connecticut and Arkansas, and then the night game, UCLA and Gonzaga, a rematch of that great national semifinal from 2 years ago. But there is some coaching news, and we'll shout out our friends at Blue Chew to sponsor this segment as well. You're the man, say it. It's all about confidence. Confidence knowing you'll be ready to go when your partner is, and confidence knowing you'll be able to go a few extra rounds when needed. Confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com, and now they also have Verdanafil mint-flavored chewables with the active ingredient in Levitra and Staxin, so you can stay hard and fresh. Blue Chew's tablets are a performance enhancement for the bedroom and can help men gain extra confidence when it's time to perform. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code MADNESS at checkout, just $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS to receive your first month free. And we mentioned Madison Square Garden. It is the mecca of basketball, as it's deemed. And yesterday, a really special day if you're a St. John's University alum, if you're a fan of the Big East Conference. Gosh, Lou Carnesecco was there, the 98-year-old the legend from St. John's, who really, I mean, it's two different stints there. He was a St. John's coach for, gosh, I think it was like a total of 30, 35 seasons. But regardless, Carnesecco there as Rick Pitino is introduced as the men's basketball coach for St. John's. And can I just first say that we need to stop. It was 20 seasons, by the way, for Carnesecco at St. John's. But we need to stop with the almost kind of villainizing and the morality police on Rick Pitino and his, you know, very checkered past. Because the reality is, and Ian O'Connor wrote a column about this in the New York Post. St. John's hired a basketball coach. And I've talked about this when we had the Brandon Miller stuff happen at Alabama. We're not supposed to idolize athletes, idolize coaches. If you're a little kid, we all do it. But then once you grow up, once you realize that these guys make some pretty stupid mistakes, and Pitino's made his fair share of mistakes with some of the programs that he has ran. But at the end of the day, his name was cleared from the escort service stuff that was going on at Louisville. And, you know, he was involved in the FBI probe, which, you know, great. Like, what a surprise. College basketball coaches were paying players to ensure their commitments. Like, are we shocked? I mean, again, really in every sport, the moral police that comes out, I've really developed this same mindset when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs. And the finger-waving that is casted on the careers of Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds as if they were the only ones that did this. So let's stop villainizing Rick Pitino. I don't necessarily like the guy either. Like, I don't like or dislike him. But his resume speaks for itself. This is a man that has taken three programs to Final Fours. Providence, Kentucky, and Louisville. Of course, Providence and Louisville, longtime members of the Big East. Providence still a member as the league reconfigured in 2013 to have a bunch of Catholic schools, basketball-only schools, that teams that don't play football. And St. John's has long been waiting a return to relevance. The Johnnies haven't won an NCAA tournament game in 20 years. So, yeah, you should be excited about this. If you're a St. John's alum, you should be excited about this. If you're a New Yorker, because I think it was my brother that always said when we would watch Louisville games in March growing up, yeah, that guy always looks like a mobster on the sidelines. And Pitino's a native New Yorker. Like, yeah, there's kind of a Ray Liotta Goodfellas, like, kind of charm that I at least enjoy about the guy. Again, I don't like or dislike him, but they call him Slick Rick for a reason. And he took a couple of years after all the stuff happened at Louisville, he went to Greece because he wanted to keep coaching and found basketball leagues to coach in there. And Iona, obviously a mid-major program that felt, when else are we ever going to get a chance to bring in a guy like Rick Pitino to our program? They did, and they don't regret it. They got the two NCAA tournaments. It should have been three if they didn't choke in their conference tournament in 2022, I think it was. So this is a good day for college basketball, a good day for the Big East. And as I said, who hasn't been running a clean program and also winning? Like, sure, maybe some programs really pride themselves on being clean while they're at the bottom of their league and never making the NCAA tournament. As I said, the guy's resume speaks for itself. And between Rick Pitino to St. John's and Ed Cooley leaving Providence within the league and going to Georgetown, this is the most juice that the Big East Conference has had since that reconfiguration in 2013, when we had the departure of Syracuse, the departure of Pittsburgh, the departure of Louisville, and all these Big East members that also had football teams. And, again, St. John's, a Catholic institution, I believe, brings a guy in. So let's stop with the moral policing of this hire needs to stop. And then Pitino yesterday really speaks like a confident guy. I mean, he's 70 years old, but he's a young 70. And he's talking about how, you know what? He basically is saying this team kind of sucked, hence why they had a coaching vacancy. And some of these guys aren't going to be around. Here's what he said.
Well, the one thing I want to be honest with, that a lot of players probably won't be back on this team because they're probably not a good fit for me. With me, I think my players love playing for me, even from Mark Jackson and Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley. I spoke with Oak last night. They love playing for me with the Knicks. But it takes a certain type of basketball player to want to play for me. He's got to be a total over-the-top in love with the game of basketball. And if you're not, it's just a bad fit with me. It doesn't work. So there'll be a lot of players that will move on to, I hope, greener pastures. Joel's the type of person that I want to build around, and that's why I asked him to come today. I have to meet some of the other young men, but there'll be other guys that don't fit. It'll be a round peg in a square hole, and it won't work.
So he's referring to Joel Soriano there, who was one of the better players for St. John's and obviously a guy that Pitino wants to keep around there. But what's the problem with any of that? I mean, I talked about it in show prep with Belmer, and we were saying it kind of feels like a little bit of a Deion Sanders when he got hired at Colorado 4 or 5 months ago to run the football program. He's like, yeah, go ahead, get in the portal, get out if you don't want to be here. I'll figure out guys that do want to be here. And listen, when you've been in this game as long as Rick Pitino's been, and as I say, three different programs in the Final Four, you know what works. And, you know, it's a good day, I believe, for college basketball, whether you like or hate the guy or land somewhere in between. Because a New Yorker is running the St. John's program, and as I said, like Lou Carnesecca, 98 years old, shows up to this thing yesterday. And, of course, they coached against each other, Carnesecca at St. John's and Pitino at Providence in the 80s. So there is a deep, rich history of Big East basketball. And Madison Square Garden is right in the middle of all of it. They've always played their league tournament there right before the big dance. Pitino's taking teams from Providence there, taking teams from Louisville there, and now he'll coach there with St. John's. This is the perfect way for him to end his career. And again, he's a young 70. He signed a 6-year deal. So, I'm all for this, and I'd like to see it work out because it provides a lot of juice. If you grew up with the Big East, you think about the bloodbaths that some of these schools would have when, you know, Cooley just got to Georgetown and he really looked up to John Thompson the second. I went to Temple. My school wasn't in the Big East, but John Chaney's teams always were really physical, roll up the sleeves, grind it out. Like that was kind of the identity that a lot of the Big East teams had. They were going to beat you up. It's going to be real physical. It's going to be really fun to watch the jawing back and forth. A little bit of that back in Queens and in New York and at the Garden. Not the end of the world with St. John's. We're back on the other side. More college basketball with Connor Hope.
Come on.
We've got your tournament coverage right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
All right, plenty of college basketball still to discuss on today's show as the second weekend begins tomorrow in New York City and in Las Vegas. And we're going to go out to our HelloFresh guest line. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60. Code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. As we're going to bring on now our guest, Connor Hope from Heat Check College Basketball, the business operations leader and the co-host of the Hangout College Basketball Podcast, joins us. Connor, thanks for a few minutes. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so before we get to the Sweet 16, plenty of coaching news in college basketball, which we'll discuss. I just finished talking about Rick Pitino's introduction at St. John's, and I am a little bit put off by all the, you know, morality police that seem to be out there on, oh, like, how dare you make this hire? And clearly college basketball, nobody cares about morals and everything. Like, I just don't like that narrative out there. The guy's name was cleared, and I think this is good for the sport that he's back in the Big East. Your thoughts on this hire?
Yeah, and to be fair to Rick Pitino, I mean, he did have to go through a cleaning out, all the bad things that were associated with him. And I'm not going to get into the Chris Beard situation, but it's not a Chris Beard situation where it seemed like the hire came right away. Rick Pitino had to clear his reputation that took going to Greece that took coaching at Iona, and he's not getting paid a ton. You know, I was actually surprised by how low the salary was at St. John's. So Rick Pitino back in the Big East is going to be fantastic for basketball, and he paid his dues, so to speak. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And, you know, I think that it's fun to see St. John's, you know, you would think matter again on a national level. So elsewhere in the Big East, Ed Cooley introduced today at Georgetown. And this one had me scratching my head a little bit because, like, I understand the Georgetown and the Thompsons and that brand and, you know, Allen Iverson and you know, what it was. But Patrick Ewing really, I felt, drove the program in the ground. I think Cooley's got a lot of work to do there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he isn't able to get Georgetown to where he had Providence. So I don't know about this move. I acknowledge the ceiling is probably higher at Georgetown. But given all that Cooley had entrenched at Providence, like, I'm not sure I would have made the move if I was him.
I think we saw Cooley at his ceiling at Providence. And if Cooley's goal is to be a coach that can get to a Final Four, that can compete on a national level for championships, Georgetown's just a better job. He's only getting paid, I think, $500,000 more at Georgetown than he was going to be at Providence. But Georgetown has all the resources, all the history. You're in the DMV area. There's just so much going right at the program for Georgetown that Patrick Ewing wasn't able to take advantage of that I think a coach like Ed Cooley will. And so if Ed Cooley felt like he had accomplished all he needed to accomplish at Providence, maybe a change of scenery was what he was looking for.
Yeah, maybe so. Any other coaching hires that stood out before we get to the Sweet 16?
I think a lot of people are going to be maybe surprised, maybe not, by the Tobin Anderson hiring at Iona to replace Rick Pitino off of what's seemingly one March run. But remember, Anderson was the plan B when Pitino was hired at Iona originally. So the March run was just kind of icing on the cake for Anderson. They were looking at him when they were going through the hiring of Pitino. And so that, I think, good for Anderson. I think the March run solidified his spot at getting that job at Iona. But I think people might be a little bit shocked to see it when really, if you look at the grand scheme of things in the history of that job, it's not as surprising as it might seem.
Okay, let's get to the Sweet 16 beginning tomorrow in Vegas and New York City. And I mentioned Vegas. That West region, to me, is so tasty when you have the Connecticut Huskies. You talk about big brands in the Big East. Connecticut, obviously one of them, and Dan Hurley was under a lot of pressure, I thought, in the first weekend to get out of the first weekend, win some games in the tournament in UConn, and he's done that. And Connecticut certainly looks like a team that can win it all. Facing Arkansas and Eric Musselman, one of the better coaches in the sport that hasn't been to a Final Four. And then, of course, the rematch from the excellent national semifinal in Gonzaga and UCLA. I love that West region. What do you think of those two games?
Yeah, the West region to me is still the most fun region to watch this weekend. You have what's going to be a slugfest between UConn and Arkansas. UConn has Adama Sanogo, one of the best bigs, one of the most physical bigs in the country. They have some big guards, which I think can match up really well against the big guards of Arkansas. And Arkansas, they like to play in the half court. They like to muck things up. They like to get really physical on defense. So that game is going to be one where it feels like, and I know Arkansas has never been in the Big East, but it feels like one of those old Big East battles where just both teams are going at it physically. And then you've got UCLA and Gonzaga they've put together two of the most memorable games in NCAA tournament history. And I think they're so evenly matched at this point, especially with UCLA missing Jalen Clark, that we're going to be in for another treat between the two schools. I don't think either school runs away with it, but we'll see if Gonzaga's offense against UCLA's defense can win, or if UCLA with David Singleton and Amari Bailey looking really good lately, if they can put up enough points on the board to keep up with the offensive attack of Gonzaga.
And then in the East, we talked about Rick Pitino getting introduced at Madison Square Garden yesterday. Well, one of the iconic coaches in the game will be coaching at Madison Square Garden tomorrow with Michigan State, Tom Izzo, trying to get to another Final Four. And, Connor, I think he's going to do it. I think that these two guards, Tyson Walker and A.J. Hogard, can really get you a bucket when everything breaks down and everybody talks about how important that guard play is in March. No disrespect to Marquise Noel and Jerome Tang at Kansas State. I like Michigan State in that game. I think Michigan State gets to another Final Four. What say you?
Yeah, I think the East broke really well for Michigan State, right? They got a team that, in Marquette, that was probably punching above their weight class all season. They played with a chip on their shoulder. They played very aggressive, but they were one of those teams that you just kind of felt like once that chip was off their shoulder, things might go downhill for them. Marquise Noel, to me, is playing like the best point guard in the country of the 16 teams remaining. So you always have to adjust for him. I don't know what A.J. Hogard we're going to see in that game. If we see the A.J. Hogard that we saw against Marquette, Michigan State could win that game going away. If we get the A.J. Hogard that we saw in the Big Ten tournament, I think that's where you start to think this Kansas State team, even though they're based around two offensive weapons, they've just got a vibe about them where, and you heard Jerome Tang say it, we have more dudes than they do about Kentucky. And Kentucky is they didn't play as well over the course of the entire season, maybe as Michigan State, but they're a more talented team than Michigan State. So right. It's going to be very interesting to see how Michigan State contains Marquise Noel, contains Keontae Johnson. But with the East region being the region of chaos, the path is there for Michigan State to make a Final Four.
Absolutely. Connor, before we let you go, no disrespect to the South region. I'm sure everybody that's impartial might become partial and get behind the Princeton Cinderella story there. But in the Midwest fascinates me on Friday as well because Larinaga and Miami, Larinaga's 73 years old and just keeps going, and his teams always seem to peak this time of year. Houston's been probably the best team in the country the entire season. And then, of course, that matchup with Xavier in Texas is very evenly matched. So this Midwest region looks like a lot of fun on Friday.
Yeah, it does. And I like that Texas-Xavier matchup a lot. And it's going to fall on Xavier's guards. If Xavier can make it a game of up and down basketball where Sule Boom and Colby Jones are hitting their threes and forcing Texas to keep pace, Xavier has a chance. But Texas is one of the few teams in the country that I feel can win regardless of game flow, regardless of pace. So when you have those two teams going at it, Xavier could win. But I think Texas has the pieces, and we haven't seen all of them perform. But if they all perform, I think they win that game. And then for Houston versus Miami, both have good offenses. Houston has an elite defense. I think Miami's defense against these guards of Houston might be where they falter and fall out.
There he is, Connor Hope, business operations leader for Heat Check College Basketball, co-host of the Hangout College Basketball podcast. Connor, appreciate your time. I'm sure we'll chat again. Always fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, and so, again, it is a very busy time of year in college basketball. A lot of coaching hires being made for teams whose seasons have concluded. A bunch of kids in the transfer portal. You really got to get moving if you're a team, a program with a vacancy, making a change with today's day and age of name, image, and likeness and transfer portal seemingly always adding more names to it that are, you know, kids that are eligible immediately. You got to re-recruit your own and recruit who's in there. So if you still have a vacancy and there are still several jobs open, kind of got to get moving on making a hire if you're one of those institutions. We'll take a timeout and we'll come back. A surprising NFL headline emerged from something that maybe almost happened last year. We'll discuss next.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, so I do kind of like when a player comes out, usually a player comes out and says, and it's usually a retired player who comes out and says, yeah, oh, by the way, this thing almost happened in my career. Could be 5 years, 10 years ago. In this case, it was just 1 year ago. And the retired player that I'm making reference to is Ben Roethlisberger, who has been quoted as saying that last year the San Francisco 49ers reached out to him. And it's interesting how even in today's media landscape, with how quickly news breaks, some of it not always correct, you still get some rumblings like this and some things that manage to stay under wraps And then we just hear it right from the source himself. And as I said, Ben said that the San Francisco 49ers reached out to him last season about a possible return to the NFL after Jimmy Garoppolo got injured. Of course, Trey Lance was their starter at the beginning of the season, and Lance went down in week two against Seattle. And I was not a big Ben Roethlisberger fan, but whether you like the veteran or not, that is reflecting back on a what if in their career or something that we as fans could just say, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. Like, whoever the subject of the conversation might be, when does it ever work out where when it comes to a retirement, post-retirement, like revival, like when does this ever work? Don't we all just kind of act like the 2 or 3 years, whatever it was, that Michael Jordan played for the Wizards never happened? And you can look at, you know, several players that try and maybe play a little too long. Yeah, I always respect the ones that just say, you know what, it's time. You know, like Drew Brees kind of went out with the Saints and like we kind of knew and he knew and that was it. And, you know, I guess to Ben's credit, like I'll say the same is kind of true with him. Where he clearly saw the writing on the wall himself in the 2021 season, his last in Pittsburgh, and that was it. And, of course, it's easy to use hindsight and say, well, you know, if they had Ben Roethlisberger, then they would have had an extra quarterback and the NFC Championship game wouldn't have been so one-sided because, of course, when Brock Purdy went down in the second quarter against Eagles, the Eagles ran away with it. But let's remove the NFC Championship from the equation. The 49ers have to feel good about the fact that they got to see Brock Purdy last year for about 2 months. Can look good. A guy that was the last pick in the draft, Mr. Irrelevant, proved to be a viable starting quarterback in the NFL. And we'll see what happens here as we, you know, get later on in the calendar year, an inch closer to NFL training camp and where Purdy's at with the elbow and recovering. And, of course, my focus has been on Trey Lance because I just want to see the kid play who was drafted number 3 overall now 2 years ago. I think he's made like 4 or 5 starts in his career, if that. But Brock Purdy at least showed the 49ers last year that they have something, and maybe he's their long-term starting quarterback. So if they had signed Ben Roethlisberger, and, you know, obviously they're the ones that reached out, so it was the interest was on the team's part, and it was the player saying, you know, I don't think I have anything left. But the 49ers actually would have done themselves a massive disservice had Ben Roethlisberger agreed to come in and they played Ben Roethlisberger, because let's just call it how it is. Ben Roethlisberger's not winning a Super Bowl for the 49ers last year. I think the Eagles probably still win. If you put Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback in the NFC Championship game last year for the 49ers, I think the Eagles still win the game. Belmer, you agree with that? Ben Roethlisberger is quarterbacking the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. And let's just say, for the purpose of the argument, the injury to Purdy happened the week prior, so San Francisco had a full week of game prep with Ben Roethlisberger.
Still think the Eagles win the game.
Eagles still win the game.
Their defense is great. They're still hitting Big Ben around. He's not getting out of the way of those sacks. So, yeah, I still think the Eagles take it.
So
that does make it more interesting, though.
It does. But that's the only argument for bringing in Ben Roethlisberger is, does this guy, obviously, before you had, if you had made this move, and I guess Roethlisberger saying the, you know, initial point of contact took place after Garoppolo went down. So if you said to yourselves, we can win the Super Bowl with Roethlisberger, then you make the move for 2022. I just thought we saw enough of Roethlisberger in 2021 when he was done with the Steelers, where sayonara. And he felt that way, too. And, again, I give them credit for knowing when it's time. And I also give them credit, like, think about it. We really didn't hear Roethlisberger's name at all last year, as opposed to some of these divas where we're going to be hearing it all. I guarantee you, we haven't heard the last of Tom Brady. And whenever Aaron Rodgers goes away from playing, we're going to hear an awful lot more about Aaron Rodgers. You know, so if Roethlisberger, I give the guys credit, too, for at least the ones that go away and want to live a more private life. But as far as the San Francisco 49ers, they should be thankful that Ben Roethlisberger said no. Because who knows what the Brock Purdy conversation, like, we maybe never have seen him play. And they're trying to latch on to Ben Roethlisberger on his last legs in hopes of making a run to the Super Bowl, which maybe they would have made if Purdy had never gotten hurt against Eagles. Like, we'll never know that. But one thing's for sure, that with the benefit of hindsight now, and given what Purdy gave the 49ers down the stretch of the regular season and in the two playoff games that they won, particularly the one against Seattle, where he had to lead them back and had a big second half after the Seahawks had the lead at halftime in the wild card round, yeah, they should be lucky that Roethlisberger said no. Because here's the thing. When you have two options, and this is why, and I actually kind of touched on this a little bit. Now, Baker Mayfield's nowhere near as old as Ben Roethlisberger, but I said this when Tampa Bay brought in Baker Mayfield. When you have two options, and those options are a young, unproven rookie or second-year player, particularly quarterback, versus the veteran who's maybe established. You know, in the case of Baker Mayfield, it's like, well, one last chance maybe, or in the case of Ben Roethlisberger, is there 2 months of turn back the clock in him? You should always go with the younger player because you want to see what the younger player has. And people would say, well, yeah, if you're a rebuilding team, of course you want to go with the younger player. But if you're in a win-now mode, maybe you want to go with the veteran. But if the veteran's not any good anymore, then what difference is it going to make? So that would have been a huge mistake on the – and maybe if Roethlisberger said yes, it would have been a mistake that the 49ers were going to make if they had said, yeah, we're going to put Roethlisberger in after Garoppolo got hurt last year because, you know, he's a veteran. He can hold down the fort. Maybe he could keep it together and stay upright for 2 months and we'd have a chance at a Super Bowl. But because his name's Ben Roethlisberger, they may have defaulted to that thinking over playing Mr. Relevant at the time, right? Brock Purdy, who knows? And I just think you should always play. Like, again, Tampa Bay, the quarterback better be Kyle Trask if your two options are Trask and Baker. Because we know what Baker is at this point. And you knew what Ben, just because they're former first-round picks, in Baker's case, former number one overall pick, you got to allow the young kid to have a chance to prove himself. You're only going to learn so much from them always sitting on the bench. And Purdy is a good example of just unleash the dog. Let him see what he's got. Let him see what he can show us. You know, let's see kind of how all the puzzle pieces come together for the rest of the roster around this young quarterback and how he comports himself and kind of what happens. And certainly he did not look to be in over his head. He didn't look like somebody that couldn't handle the moment. Played on some big stages in college at Iowa State. So don't do this if you're a team that, like, I think I've heard some rumblings about Philip Rivers. You shouldn't make the call because if I'm sitting here saying that it didn't make sense for San Francisco, who was a loaded team everywhere but quarterback last year, then I can't think of a team where it would make sense. Because another team that maybe isn't as good as San Francisco, if they bring in Philip Rivers or whoever else wants to try and come back, it's going to be even harder for that quarterback to have success because San Francisco maybe is the one team in the NFL that's like quarterback-proof. And I'm saying that even San Francisco should not have done what it maybe almost did last year in bringing the veteran out of retirement. We'll take a timeout. It's actually an NIT college basketball headline that I saw, which we'll address on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.